What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Tag Team Pokemon Trading Card Games from your podcasting trio. My name is Riley Holbert, joined as always by my two good friends, Mr. Andrew Mahone and Mr. JW Crewall. Guys, how's it hanging today?
Oh, it's hanging lovely, Riley. Thank you for asking. How are
lovely.
You?
Oh, that's pretty good, but JW can get a word in too.
Yeah, no, I'm doing well, man. You know, all things considered.
All things considered, he says. I don't like the vibes of that, man.
No, it's good. It's good, all things considered.
Stop attaching that. Is it good
I'm
or not?
Serious.
Jeez.
All things
considering
fun,
the good. Fact that, you know, like JW's got a lot of free time, like he's doing pretty good with it.
Yeah, well, you know, I did get to have some time on the Tricky Jim channel, a featured guest on the Tricky Jim tabletop stream last week.
That's huge,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really,
I was
big,
really big.
Profile.
I was chopping up some of that gameplay we were doing. It was awesome to have you by, and you know, really nice to be able to do one of those streams with you. I mean, I don't think that we have, not in my recent memory, have we done anything like that. So it was really nice to get you out.
Yeah, I don't think in the new studio.
Definitely not, and it's been a while. So
definitely been a long time. It's like, the last time I can remember is I was pretty new to Madison, I think. So it would have been like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, like anytime I get you guys on for like a stream or something like that, I mean, like I had done some tabletop episodes with like Riley before, you know, maybe I've done one with JW before. It's always like a rare circumstance when we get the boys together in the studio.
Yeah, and that's why you need to hire us.
Right, yeah. I'm almost there. I have an editor. Listen, baby steps. All right.
That's right.
Last year was my first year with an editor.
I was thinking if Anne gets a job in Cleveland and we live in Independence, then that's only like a 20-minute commute to either Akron or Cleveland. What are your thoughts on Independence, Ohio?
I can't say that I've spent any amount of time there.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like you were the one really advocating for Columbus, though, and kind of trash-talking Northeastern Ohio.
No, I'm not trash. I love Cleveland. I do. I really love. I was just up there for the Lunar New Year celebration. My wife and I went and visited some friends up in Cleveland last week and saw a new baby of a friend that we just hadn't seen. They hadn't seen Harper. She's been alive for 2 years almost, and then we hadn't seen their newest child, so just got together and had some dinner and hung out. And it was a lot of
nice.
Fun. Yeah, Cleveland. I miss Cleveland.
Well, there you go.
Well,
maybe Independence.
Cleveland
in
would love to have you back, yes. And so would the Tricky Jim YouTube channel.
There you go.
Well, we got some fun stuff on the agenda for today. Taking a more of a look forward at what's to come in the Pokemon trading card game. We got some new cards revealed in the Crimson Haze set, and we are fresh off the back of the most recent Champions League post-rotation, so we get a little bit of a glimpse at the Japanese take of what the post-rotation metagame might look like, which will surely inform folks testing as we look ahead towards UIC. So I think let's just jump right into it, guys. Let's hit on the Crimson Haze.
Dude, I mean, I think
let's hit the Crimson Haze, bro.
No. What the heck? Dude. Your mind's
right,
better, man.
Man.
I twist my arm. You're crazy.
Pass.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, Mom, if you're listening.
For legal reasons, I have no idea what you're talking about. But
I think the card that I think stands out to me and most other people is the newest A-Spec, Unfair Stamp. I think this card is kind of crazy. A-Spec, of course, you can only play one in your deck. Each player shuffles their hand into their deck, then you draw 5 cards, and your opponent draws 2. Now, there is the caveat that you can only play this if one of your Pokemon was knocked out during your opponent's last turn. So I really appreciate that kind of conditional aspect to the Unfair Stamp, and I think this is a really well balanced card overall.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's well balanced. Counterpoint, I don't want my A spec to be well balanced. I want it to be disgusting.
Broken as heck, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like there was a lot of hullabaloo floating around social media when this card was first revealed about how insane it is and how broken it is. And I don't really get that vibe in the same way. It's definitely a strong card, but it's a conditional A spec, which already I don't love.
Right.
And like, you know what, if your opponent draws out of it, you just like wasted your A spec. That
Right.
doesn't feel great. I think what I would look for in A spec is more proactivity, like doing more for myself. Thankfully, it does still draw you the five cards, which is, something. But, as compared to like Prime Catcher, if you use Prime Catcher as kind of the litmus test for an A spec, which I would personally right now, I think Prime Catcher ekes it out. It's a little more proactive. You're getting more out of it during your turn. And you're advancing your board state. Whereas Unfair Stamp, if you don't draw well yourself off the Unfair Stamp, then you're not actually doing anything besides hoping your opponent doesn't draw well. Unless you're doing like crazy Arbok stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess
That's
I
my
didn't
take.
really consider that it might actually be a detriment to shuffle your hand and draw five. Like for some of these decks that try to amass a huge hand, I'm thinking of like Goldengo, for instance. You just want to have these massive hands filled with energy, and Unfair Stamp might actually not be good. I mean, of course, you maybe play Prime Catcher in that deck anyway, but there's a lot of decks that maybe this just doesn't make a lot of sense to go into.
I'm gonna hold the opinion that I think this card is just not very strong at all. And I think, weighing it against a card like Prime Catcher, I think is fair. If we take a look at the results from Japan, which we're gonna do later in the episode, then you will see that the premier A spec is actually Master Ball, which also
Which we all knew.
which is also a proactive card though, so it does fit the bill. Whereas it does something
Oh, I
to
get the
advance your
premiere
own
is maybe a stretch from the
premier,
result.
the first place winningest A spec. But yeah, I think that you kind of highlighted some of the issues with this unfair stamp. Pretty clearly, I've heard chatter about, oh, well, like hand removal and stuff like that could be a thing with this. I mean, there's like the Arbok EX. There's even the Luxray V, which can snipe, fang snipe a trainer card away from your opponent's hand. You could unfair stamp and then do that. The problem with baking unfair stamp into your strategy and really baking hand removal into your deck strategy is that you're relying on a one of a spec card that you can't reliably get out of your prize cards. So if your whole strategy is like banking on one time removing your opponent's hand with that A spec, you could do it one time and then like you happen to prize it, then you're just playing Arbok EX deck. That's like not good. So I do agree that I like A specs that do more proactive things, kind of help more holistically with the direction that the deck is going. Another Gust Out is like always great. Another Pokemon Search out in a deck like Lugia is like exactly what you need. In the Donphan Mill deck, or not Donphan, Great Tusk Mill deck, Yolden Donphan. In the Great Tusk Mill deck, having another HP boosting tool, right? I mean, it's like all of these A specs kind of coincide with the strategies of the decks already. And then they just kind of enhance it a little bit more. I'm not sure that Unfair Stamp really kind of jives with anything else necessarily. I mean, maybe your deck's playing a lot of Roxanne's. I don't know.
Yeah,
The
no, it's
Roxanne
interesting.
deck.
Really, really, some interesting points there. I would just say that, yeah. What about a nice Arbok though? Imagine you take a knockout turn one on my Ekans. Okay, let me set the stage. Boom, I evolve. Boom, double dark patch. Boom, I play the stamp and then I discard your entire hand. Like, how mad are you gonna be when that
Okay,
happens to
but
you?
here's my beef with that is not only just the 10% of games that you prize the stamp, right? Just offer it. Is all you also have to get the stamp, even if it's in your deck, you have to get it out of your deck somehow, right? Like you have to
Boom,
draw it.
Arvin.
Okay, but then you're playing an Arbok deck, right? Like you have to get the dark energy in the discard pile, you gotta get the dark patches, and you're playing Arvin for turn, like
Many other decks play Arvin for turn and they're happy about it, okay?
Because they just want one card out of their... They want to play one card that whole turn. It's
well,
like
I think, too, I think too, like, the more I think about it, it's like, well, what if the opponent has an attacker that can survive, like, an Arbok
attack?
Yeah,
or what if they just
right?
attack
like,
you back? Yeah.
Like, an Arceus deck, like, dude's not... Like, you have so much time to draw out of that, or you can get your Bibarel in play, and that just
right, and, like,
the
theory mod is, yo, I'm going to countercatcher, and I'm going to Arbok you, right? I'm going to countercatcher your Bibarel, and then Arbok you down to zero. But that means you didn't hit my attacker, right? That's the...
So I think the concept of like really building the unfair stamp into a hand removal strategy, I'm not sold on that whatsoever, because the whole concept of the unfair stamp is that your opponent has a valid attacker already established because they have to in order for you to be able to play the stamp in the first place. So if you're baking the unfair stamp with like Luxray V or like Arbok, neither of those dudes are doing anything to the attacker that is staring you down already. So I think that unfair stamp is going to be better in a deck like Roaring Moon, Darkrai V-Star, where you're just like you're just smashing the active, and then like every time your Roaring Moon gets knocked out, you could unfair stamp them to two and then smash them again. And then if they knock that guy out, you could Darkrai unfair stamp.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
And smash them again, and then just maybe they don't respond to one of your smashings. But you could still
make the argument that like Prime Catcher is like the primo choice.
Of course, but this is like the most realistic scenario I see it being played is in that scenario.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking more along the lines of like Giratina V-Star, like Lost Zone Giratina V-Star. Mm-hmm. You know, they play the heavy Roxanne anyway. This is like your extra Roxanne for the early game.
Sure.
But then that deck doesn't have like path
into
anymore.
Roxanne, bro.
Yeah.
That's kind of nuts.
Which they've always wanted, for sure. Yes. And like, you know, I would say the Lost Zone decks are probably the best at like digging deep to hit particular resources. And it's, you know, it's fairly flexible because you kind of play a one prize strategy through a lot of the game, so you can get away with it. I don't know. But then you're not playing Path of the Peak anymore, and it's just like a little less disruptive than it would have been with Path, you know. So yeah, I don't know. I think the unfair stamp card is just a little underwhelming relative to some of the other ace decks we've seen.
Now, when JW called out unfair stamp as being like the card that was generating the most hype, I actually thought you were leading us into the Blood Moon Ursaluna EX card.
Well, now, okay, because... I do think that this card is like cracked beyond measure. This is like one of the better cards that
it's
I
so good.
Have
yeah.
seen in a while. I mean, this like is reminiscent. I mean, I see the card and I'm like, oh my gosh, every deck is gonna play one. You might as well. It feels like because
it can attack
how...
for free, dog.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
What I did.
And it has 260 HP, bro. It's a basic. What have they done?
Isn't it also kind of screwed up that Ursaluna is a stage two, but Blood Moon Ursaluna is a basic?
For whatever reason.
Isn't that kind of
like
messed
five
up?
Five Nights at Freddy's, dude.
Yeah.
What's
just like
lore?
Freddy Fazbear.
What's the lore like, behind Blood
it's
Moon?
It's just
Ursaluna.
Like when Freddy Fazbear scooped the guy. No, but seriously, the Blood Moon Ursaluna is nuts. I guess just to quickly catch people up, if they're not familiar, we've said some of the traits of the card. It's got 260 HP, colorless EX Pokemon. It has an ability very similar to Radiant Charizard, where its attacks cost one colorless less for each prize card your opponent's taken. And then for five colorless, it does 240, and it can't attack the next turn. So very, very similar to Radiant Charizard, right? It has a similar damage attack, similar concept. I think the two main differences is, of course, it's a very tanky two prize Pokemon as opposed to a moderately tanky one prize Pokemon. And it has no colored energy requirement whatsoever. So that both means it can be put into any deck without regard for the energy cost. And that it means that it can actually get to free if you are down five prize cards to your opponent. So it's really interesting, like card design. I think the one. You know, I guess the one downfall of it is that it does have three retreat. It's like a fatty. And so if you play it in every single deck, that means every single deck has a chance to start it with his five energy attack and his three retreat cost. That's not great. But I think otherwise, the card's just nuts, right? It's the kind of thing that you have to justify not playing almost.
I'm in agreement. Yeah, I mean, it's just such a crazy card. Like, you think about how good a card like Radiant Charizard was or is, and then think about that, but splashable in every deck, right? Has the most HP of any basic, you know, realistically without any like modifiers. 260 HP is just crazy. And the fact that it can attack for free or one energy, you know, or even that you could power it up in any number of ways over the course of the game. It really makes it like you need to have justification for not playing it because there's so much that is good about the card that it seems like it should just be in every deck.
Yeah, it's nuts. I think that I do see it more of a splashable, you know, single inclusion card. I mean, some people on stream were asking me if I thought that the Blood Moon Ursaluna could be its own deck. I don't think so. Yeah, a 5 energy cost attack to start the game off just is not great. And then, you know, people are like, oh, you could play it with Fortress. Like, no, you're not going to want to, like, do that. Just because you could doesn't mean you should. 240 damage. I mean, let's kind of talk about that benchmark, because I do think that that's an interesting number to hit. Charizard, you know, Radiant Charizard is obviously going to gain a lot of comparisons to Radiant Charizard as this kind of like end game finisher. Radiant Charizard hits 250, has been paired with cards like Choice Belt and Defiance Band and stuff like that to help you get to that 280, or even just Sableye and its Lost Mind attack, allowing you to kind of clean up those numbers. Because 250 doesn't one-hit KO everything. I mean, it one-hit KOs pretty much all basic Vs and all basic EXs, except for this guy, apparently, who's got 260 hit points.
Can't KO itself.
Yeah. But 240 is just 10 shy. But, I mean, when you're up in that kind of realm of almost being able to one-hit KO V-stars, every 10 damage does matter. So what is Ursaluna clearing? What is it noticeably not clearing? What are the realistic applications for knocking things out with Ursaluna?
Well, I think you could look at Ursaluna against like Iron Hands, right? 240 knockout on Iron Hands. So that would be decks that historically have struggled against Iron Hands, which, I mean, might even be a like a Lost Box style deck that has no other big attacker, and they maybe want to splash in the Ursaluna and get a couple of you know, Mirage Gates or energy attachments after the opponent has already used the Iron Hand. So that would be kind of one that comes to mind immediately for me.
Yeah, I think to me it seems this, and this is why I'm not as turbo on the Ursaluna as maybe some other folks are. I think its primary application is really either going to be swinging just for generically big damage in like a Lost Box deck, or to knock out a like basic V or EX. You know, 240 is kind of like that master threshold that KOs every 2 prize basic Pokemon that isn't like a Werelord type thing.
Isn't
Blood Moon Ursaluna, right? So like, and that's even, you know, even with the double turbo, you go to 220, which KOs most 2 prize basics. You know, there's a couple now that are starting to eke up to the 230. Particularly like Iron Thorns and Roaring Moon, but a lot of basic like Maridon, for example, has 220, and so you can slap a double turbo on, for example, and attack even earlier into the game for 220 and in decks that utilize that, like an Arceus deck or something. And I think that's really where its niche is primarily going to be, is doing a lot of damage to just clear those thresholds. It's not as convenient to get to like the 280 as you could with Charizard. It's not as convenient to reach up to the big evolution EX numbers. So I don't know. I think it's a good card. I think it's a really good card for sure. I just, you know, to answer your hypothetical, Andrew, I don't see it reaching some of those big KOs. And because of the 2 prizer, like there's more opportunity cost to putting it into play.
Yes.
What about playing it with a maximum belt though? Give it 50 extra damage. All of a
that's
sudden,
that's only for EXs, though, right?
Yeah. So you're not hitting V stars, notably. I mean, that's like the big thing. It doesn't.
Yeah, good
it
point.
Does not easily get to 280. Good which, point. I mean, we're already talking about a card that does, you know, does a lot. but it's an end game card, right? And like a lot
which
of
doesn't those... necessarily address immediately an end game threat.
Yes. Know? Right. It's an end game card, right? But we're talking about it knocking out basic V's and EXs. So like yes, it overkills Pokemon like Lumineon, Rotom V, stuff like that, that are maybe just going to be around. If you're up against a squishy deck like Maridon or even even your Roaring Moon and stuff, and that's not squishy, and kind of, if they use their gouging, whatever.
I mean, yeah, attack. You're really squishy after that.
Frenzy gouging, yeah, you're really squishy after that. Right, so like it can clean up those guys, but it's not cleaning up. It's not cleaning up your Charizards. It's not cleaning up your Pidgeots. It's not cleaning up your Giratina V-Stars. It's not cleaning up your Arceus V-Stars. And it's not cleaning up your Lugia V-Stars either. And we just kind of saw, I mean, kind of as like a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a foreshadowing, and we saw the results from the first major tournament in Japan. Like, what is Ursaluna actually doing, right? Is kind of like my question. It is just a great card. I mean, obviously, I think it's very strong. But finding the right niche for it, I think, will also be important. And I kind of also see it existing in Lost Box decks. I mean, that's like an easy answer because that those decks are the decks that kind of have played cards like this, like Dragonite V, right? I mean, it almost is like that. And you could, I mean, so one more thing to address on this card before we move on. I think its tankiness, I mean, could be part of the strategy. You put a Bravery Charm on this thing, and it's got 310 hit points as a basic, which is just ridiculous. It's got the colorless typing, which means that it goes with cards like Sharon's Care, and you could play Turo Scenario, I mean, pick it up, whatever. With double turbo energy and Sharon's Care, I mean, once your opponent has taken three prize cards, you're kind of just like, you could theoretically pick the card up and just lay it back down and keep slugging away or whatever. That's just, I mean, that kind of stuff is possible with its colorless typing and its massive HP, I guess.
Oh, well, yeah. I will say that. On the typing, I think this card would be absolutely crazy in GLC.
Well,
so let's bring it in, baby.
It's got a rule box.
Announcing the new GLC exception list. One per type.
This colorless. Is a troll. All right. Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. I'm with you. I think that definitely the best applications are in like a Arceus Charon's Loop type of thing or in a Lost Box. Yeah, so we got a couple other cards that I think are maybe worth highlighting. Enhanced Hammer is getting reprinted, which is pretty cool. I think same sitch as like a lot of the other cards, though, is like who's playing it is kind of my question.
It's just a good option to have. It's not that the card like has to be good on release. It's just that it exists in the format.
Oh, yeah.
And there will be some deck that will play it for some reason. I think, you know, people have been talking about Mist Energy as something that Enhanced Hammer would be particularly good at removing. So Mist Energy blocks effects of attacks. So, for instance, if Roaring Moon gets big and you have a whole format where players are playing Mist Energy, then you can remove that before attacking them with that, or similarly something like, you know, Sableye removing Mist Energy.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
I'm just happy that this exists, right?
It's, you know, one of the best kind of generic throw in one or two item cards that's ever been printed. You know, think back to like YZG days when Yveltal decks would just play two of them just cause, and that's just like, that's what it feels like to me.
I played two in my Yveltal Garbodor deck.
Exactly.
My 16 regional championships. Like, yeah, oh, you just did, because it's just awesome. It's just being able to bop a double colorless just for free is crazy. I'm also really happy that the card is back. You know, it's not the kind of card where it's like, oh, yeah, every deck's going to play these. Like, no. And I think that some people can be short-sighted like that when it comes to reviewing cards. I mean, this card is going to be in the standard card pool for, what, like 3 years now? And
2 to 3 years.
Yeah, 2 to 3 years. And the last time that we had Enhanced Hammer was Guardians Rising. That's the last time it was printed. So, like, the beginning of the Sun and Moon set. And since then, we've had just totally weak wet noodle cards, like Dangerous Drill or like Fan of Waves, you know, like nothing really that hit the same. We also saw a period of time where Special Energy was probably the most rampant that it ever was in the Pokemon TCG, with decks like Lugia V-Star and Mew V-Max just like playing the Rapid Strike deck, the whole concept of the Rapid Strike deck, just kind of only playing so many energy and never having to worry about them getting removed, right? Entire archetypes came and went without ever having to sweat an Enhanced Hammer. And I'm just happy that Enhanced Hammer's here is a check to the Special Energy now.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think the Special Energy pool, there's like not a ton that I'd be super amped to Enhanced for. But I agree. It's like a very future-proofed card. You know, it's something that keeps energy, and it gives Pokemon as well the flexibility to print like stronger or more interesting Special Energy, because there is counterplay inherently in the format.
Better or worse. Any other cards that we want to highlight before we move on to the results from Japan?
Got to talk about the Thorns, bro.
Yeah, the Thorns.
Iron Thorns EX, 230 HP, Lightning basic Pokemon from the future. With the ability Initialize, while this Pokemon is in the active spot, Pokemon with a rule box in play don't have any abilities. Except for future Pokemon, that's true. Bolt Cyclone is the attack, 140 damage. Move one energy from this Pokemon to one of your bench Pokemon. If this sounds like Empoleon V, for the most part,
Dude, it is. It's slightly better than Empoleon V, right?
Okay, in what ways? I mean, it has the future package, so immediately there's a little bit of boost there. It does a little more damage.
It doesn't actually sound that much like Empoleon, because Empoleon V's ability was super bad.
Empoleon V was played, dude. That was like a playable card.
I kind of disagree that it was playable. It was kind of played.
People played that card, man.
Played and playable, kind of occupy slightly different spaces.
I feel like Empoleon at least like top aided regionals. That's fair, right?
Maybe a single regional.
There was only one tournament where it was like seriously, like actually considered a viable card, and that was like Collinsville, or Peoria, sorry, of that year.
Okay.
Peoria of the Mew year is like the one tournament that people actually considered playing Empoleon for, I think.
Let's set the stage. We're in a format which no longer has Path to the Peak, and there are like Pokemon seems weirdly obsessed with creating these like ability lock but only in the active spot kind of guys. There's an ancient one and a future one. There was Empoleon V. There was Galarian Weezing before that. There's Klefki, which I think didn't do what they wanted it to do to the format. So, like, and now they have said goodbye to Escape Rope. And they are saying, and there was Ting Lu as well, which also just totally sucked. So now you've got like all these guys, and they keep printing them. And none of them have been good.
Dang. That's harsh.
Galarian Weezing was like the best one. And it was like really not great. It did win a regional once. But that was like a rogue Eternatus VMAX deck, and nobody quite knows how it got the job done.
And it was really close to not.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, that's all true. Is there a future Pokemon with Strafe? No, right?
No, there isn't.
Because that would be kind of sick if you had like the Iron Crowns powering you up, and then you strafed for like 100 into
Thorns. Idea is that the Thorns just has a usable attack. You can boost it up to 240. I mean, you can, right? With your Iron Crown and your Future Booster Energy Capsule, and you're passing an energy back, I mean, that's got everything that it wants.
Yeah, it's just kind of an awkward cost.
You can play with the baton too.
Lightning and two colorless. It's not even that awkward. That's about as flexible as it gets.
I mean, it's just high, relatively speaking, high. You know, Future doesn't have acceleration really, besides attacking with the Maraidon.
No generator, bro.
Yeah.
You ever read Electric Generator?
But if you're playing like a more dedicated Future deck, are you playing like all that stuff?
I think that
that's how the Future decks are built right now.
The Is only it? Top 16 Future deck from Japan was a Lightning like Turbo Hands Future deck.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's doable.
Yeah, I guess it fits into that for sure.
But as far as ability lock goes, it doesn't hit non-rule box Pokemon's abilities. I think that's like the major sticking point, right? It'll stop, you know, your Arceus V-Star, it'll stop your Charizard EX, it'll stop Chenpao EX, but it won't stop the Baxcalibur, it won't stop the Bibarel. So is that too much of a situational ability lock to be successful?
I think I'd rather take that over the Empoleon, which is the kind of the inverse, but worse. Empoleon was so bad, GW. Did you read the card? Started looking at it?
Well, I was trying to find the tournament where it got top 8, surely.
Can you just like take a breather and read the card? Like, it's so restrictive.
Well, I mean, I get it. But this one has a lot going for it. You have the Future package again.
Yeah, it's better than Empoleon.
It's a little bit easier to power up, right? Presumably. Yeah. Already kind of an archetype where it makes sense to go in. Like, Empoleon never, I feel like, never really had, like, oh, this just is the archetype you play it in. I mean, I don't know. It always felt kind of mashed in certain places to try to slow down decks. But this actually seems like it could be a viable option to have.
Yeah, I think the question that comes with it is just like, how impactful is it actually to do that disruption? So, you know, the decks that'll be most impacted, Andrew listed out Arceus, Charizard, probably the big ones that really care about the rule box abilities. Charizard, you'd probably still rather swing with your Iron Hands if you're picking a Future Pokemon. And Arceus, hit or miss. If they get the attack off, they don't really care.
Right.
Boom. Unfair stamp. Boom. Iron Thorn's active.
I think... All right.
It's all a package.
It's coming together for me now. The best part about Garbodor, right? All right, we're going all the way back real quick. The best part about Garbodor was that you could ability lock and have a real attacker in the active spot, right?
Yes.
Like a real good one. The best part about Path to the
Peak. Often the best one in the format.
Yes, the best one. You just picked whatever the best guy was, right, at swinging. The best part about Path to the Peak is that you could ability lock while having a totally broken attacker in the active spot, like Giratina V-Star. All of these have to be in the active ability lock, guys. Suck, because they are not that guy, all right? They are not that attacker. Right? Iron Thorns is not that guy. He does 140 damage at best. He's boosting to like 200. He's not that, like, that dude you want in the active spot, like pummeling dudes down while inflicting ability lock. Maybe, but probably not.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best angle of attack there. Just not doing enough.
You're overthinking this. It's a broken card.
I mean, I think it's fine inclusion in the Future stuff. You know, now that you all have laid out the Future build to me, I think it's fine, like, one of. But you can also probably just play zero. You know, it's... you know, either's fine.
Doesn't really matter. Yeah. Okay, any last thoughts on any of the other cards? We got Screamtail EX, kind of annoying.
Screamtail sucks.
I know. There's now a Dragon Applin, which is kind of fun for GLC heads out there. Perrin. Many people are saying Perrin is one of the better cards from the newly
You're
released.
You're trolling. You watched the stream today,
Many are saying. Many are saying that.
I had some people trying to tell me that Perrin was playable and decent. It is not. It is trash. It's a double Pokemon communication on a supporter. Holy smokes!
We got the Champions Festival reprint, guys. Let's not forget.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, Champions Festival reprint, Community Center. Pretty fun.
Kind of.
Kind of, yeah. Champions Festival at home.
I mean, you could argue it's better. It depends on your deck, to be honest. And we got Fionn, the most pointless Pokemon of all time.
Yeah, I agree. What is the lore behind Fionn?
I don't know, Manaphy had a kid.
There's like a Manaphy Fionn, like one's a baby and one is a...
Yeah, Fionn's like if... Because I think the idea is like Manaphy hatches from an egg, so like you might try and breed your Manaphy and when you got Manaphy for the first time in Diamond and Pearl. But then if you do that, you just get this crapper.
Get Fionn if you breed a Manaphy?
Yeah.
But it's not evolved, so how... I don't get it.
Yeah, it's just a Manaphy without legs. It sucks.
It's like Yoda and Baby Yoda, you know?
You mean Yoda and Grogu?
guy who definitely knows about Yoda and Baby Yoda.
Guy who did not watch that show.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's funny. All right, well... Good stuff. Yeah, a lot of new cards, a lot of fun things to look forward to. But we also have something fun to look forward to, and that is our sponsor for today's cast. That is Manscaped. Manscaped is the premier men's grooming product maker. They have so many fantastic and wonderful items to keep you nice and clean, nice and well-groomed. And listen, I... wore my boxers to Knoxville and it turned out pretty well for me, and I can guarantee that it'll work out really well for you
legally.
Legally I can't say that, but it will. Riley, why don't you tell the folks back at home what they can expect from a Manscaped product?
Absolutely. Yeah, Manscaped, like JB said, is the premier men's grooming brand. They have all sorts of wonderful stuff, from their ear and nose hair trimmers down to their boxer briefs, and even conditioner, shampoo, pretty much everything you could want in your restroom. Manscaped's got you covered. And we here at Tag Team have also got you covered. So if you head over to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout. That's TAGTEAM at checkout. You'll get not only 20% off, but free shipping. Valentine's Day is just passed, but if you missed out on the chance to get a gift for someone that you care about, Manscaped's a great option. Or if you're just looking to pick something up for yourself as we head into the rest of the Pokemon tournament season, taking care of yourself, to me, is a core factor of success in life and in Pokemon. So show up clean and fresh to your Pokemon tournaments with Manscaped.
Head on over to manscaped.com. Use code TAGTEAM at checkout. 20% off plus free shipping. That's manscaped.com at checkout. Use code TAGTEAM. 20% off plus free shipping. Thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. So the Champions League happened in Japan. There's a huge tournament. 2,600 players. That just happened. And we had some very interesting results. Andrew, why don't you walk us through what happened last weekend?
2,655 players competing in the Champions League, a single game Swiss event where single games go all the way through top cut, baby, and even in the finals. I know, it's like, on one hand, I think it's like super epic that they just do things like that. And I don't know. I think us Americans could learn a lot from that. Just like,
I agree,
up.
Man.
Like,
yeah,
from
dude,
a tournament
like
organizer standpoint, just shut up and play. You know, just shut up. These are the rules. Listen, we got families to feed and lives to go live. Like, you're not keeping us here for 48 hours. You're just not. There's 2,600 of you. Yeah, there's 2,600 of you. We're out of here by 7. Like, shut up and deal with your variants. It's Pokemon cards. I think that there's like a certain crop of the community that would do well to hear that. However, that's not how we do things internationally, but it is how they do things in Japan. So, single game Swiss, it's, you play one game, you dead draw, tough luck.
Make your deck more consistent.
Make your deck more consistent, maybe next time. And the results, in a lot of ways, reflect. That, right? We've got some very consistent, proven archetypes that are making rounding out the top eight. The most interesting deck in top eight, in my opinion, is the deck that ended up winning the whole event. We had Lugia V-Star Archaeops with the new Chinchino, its special roll attack. Does 70 damage times the amount of special energy cards attached to it. So if you have five special energy cards attached to your Chinchino, you're going to be doing 350 damage. Even with a double turbo energy, that's 330, enough to clear Charizard EX. We had three Arceus V-Star decks, an Arceus V-Star Vulpix V-Star deck in the finals, and two Arceus V-Star Giratina V-Star decks in top eight. One lone Charizard EX deck. It was the Bibarel variant at fourth place. Two Snorlax control decks, one in top four and one in top eight. And a lone Lost Zone toolbox deck at fifth place. So really, a lot of the same old in top eight. But there was the Lugia V-Star deck, and it was playing Master Ball, which is why I made my Master Ball joke earlier that it is the premier A-Spec out of Temporal Forces, because it won the 2,600-player event. Ninth through 16th place gets a lot more interesting. There was, you know, a lot of the same decks that we saw in Top 8, some Snorlax Control, some Giratina V-Star, a couple of Charizards, but there was one Ancient Toolbox deck. There was one mill deck with the Great Tusk. And there was one Future Toolbox deck that featured Iron Hands heavily. So, those are our results.
Yeah, now how do you feel about the Great Tusk mill? I gotta ask, because you had been putting some time into it. And when we had played on our tabletop stream, you were convinced that this deck had something to it. I was not convinced based on our games, but you were like, no, no, just one more. You know, I know this is good. I almost beat Jesse the other day. So do you feel a little validated?
Why are you making it sound like that?
Because I did sound like that. Come on, bro. No, one more game, bro.
Dude,
no,
I didn't, bro.
Yeah,
seriously.
Come on, man. I didn't.
I just didn't set up that game, bro.
That was Bavarians. Yeah, run it again.
Do you feel validated to see it in top 16?
Part of me, it's like a head scratcher, because these lists, and the thing is, you look at these lists that are doing well, these lists are the lists that have been played around Japan at their city leagues or whatever for the last 2-3 weeks. Like if you've had your kind of your finger on the pulse over there and have been keeping track, like these lists have not changed much. These are the lists that they've been playing at their locals and have been, you know, posting on X and sharing on Pokekabook and all of that. And these are the lists that showed up to this event. So the Great Tusk Mill deck that I had been playing on stream is not too far off of this Great Tusk Mill deck that finished in the top 16 of this event. Like, you know, I had my hands on that strategy for the last couple weeks. It doesn't feel consistent or that great. I really don't know how it did it. I know its high-end potential is there. It's a 200 hit point Pokemon with its HP boosters, and you are milling four cards a turn. If you're up against opponents who just don't know how to deal with that, I could see it stealing some wins, most definitely. But you've only got the four Tusks, and you have to play these ancient supporters every turn. So you have to play Sada or the Explorers. You just have those are the two, right? In order to mill four cards, you got to play one of those terrible supporters. And it doesn't feel good. It's not consistent, right? And that was like the biggest thing that I was running into. You have to play like three Artisan. You got to play the four Nest Ball. You're just hoping that you don't prize too many Tusks, that you're able to get them all out quickly, and that you're able to stream attacks back to back to back. You're hoping that your opponent does some of the milling for you by playing cards like Colorless or Research or whatever, and that you're able to just basically race them down. You're hoping that they don't play very smart is really what it comes down to.
Dang. Hater vibes. That's all I got to say.
I think, like, okay. So,
it's probably got a good Charizard matchup, right?
The Tusk Mill's four cards a turn. I think Charizard's probably its best matchup. The Tusk Mill's four cards a turn, and if every Tusk, like, attacks twice for, like, eight cards or something, you're at, what, like, what, five times eight?
Can you do that math? Or... do you need help?
It's like, you know, it's like 40. That's like almost, sure is, that's man. Almost there. That's like almost there. You know, because your opponent starts with seven cards. They have six prizes. I mean, granted, they probably play some cards, but you're also not getting, you're not getting like a perfect two mil out of every single Tusk. And there's,
yeah.
It sometimes your opponent's gonna vacuum and one hit KO them. Sometimes you're not gonna have the HP booster.
Sometimes
you know,
they
you
just
can't...
KO it anyway.
Sometimes they just KO it anyway, right? Because you got 200 hit points and they could just do that, right? So if every Tusk only mills four cards, then you're in a much more bleak situation. You're talking like 20 to 24 cards that you've milled, which is not nearly enough to win a game. Not even close.
Yeah, counterpoint is that, you know, like Durant in the day could only mill four per turn, and those Durants were going down for the most part, you know?
Yes, but you also had, okay, so you had Pokemon Catcher. This deck has Counter Catcher, which is more or less the same thing. I guess those Durant decks were playing, like, Crushing Hammers and stuff, and, okay, the Durant deck also could play Juniper. That was, like, the big difference. The Durant deck could just play Juniper, right? You could just draw N. You could, like, end your opponent to one, strand something, right? And then, like, go to town. Whereas, like, the Tusk deck has to play the stupid Seta or the stupid Explorer's Guidance. It's the worst part about it.
No, you can mill one otherwise. I mean, it's not like it's useless if you don't play the Ancient Supporter. You'd still mill one.
Yeah.
One and this is fun. This is fun, Andrew, here for you, a little math. One is actually a quarter of four.
Now,
you're using kind of crazy words there, man. I'm not following.
The Great
anymore.
Tusk list that finished in the top four or top 16, excuse me, did play one copy of Airy, which is not a ancient supporter. So theoretically, they are planning on.
I didn't really. I don't get the Airy.
Okay, so this is actually a really good transition because I think we've spent a little too much time on Tusk Mill, but there are a lot of decks in this, in the results that I've seen, the top 16 here from this tournament, that played Airy. I mean, you look at some of these Arceus decks that are playing Airy. The second place list played Airy. The sixth place list played two Airy. Like, there is some fascination with this card that I never really understood. Like, coming out as, okay, Airy is interesting, surely it would be played in a stall deck, but why is it being played in Arceus, do you guys think?
Imagine discarding Counter Catchers out of the stall deck player's hands. That's nuts.
One time.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's an anti-stall measure, dude.
Oh.
I don't know. Like,
Airy,
I don't
stack
know.
The Counter Catchers.
Yeah.
I don't know if the one of Airy's it for that, but maybe.
That's the,
well, no,
that's
cause
the
you can...
best use I could think of.
No, that actually makes it... I actually, like, completely agree with that. That's probably why they're here. Because you just need it for that one turn, right? Like, they strand something active, and then you just, okay, I'm going to draw my Switch, draw my Airy, and then, you know, wait until I have both those pieces, and then just switch
Airy. I mean,
they're
in all of the Arceus decks. I mean, that's where the Airy is being played. Like,
yeah, I mean, they're Airing you back, though, so you can't just, like, wait until you draw that GW.
No, you're using your A-Spec to do it. Or you're using
your V-Star
power.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, you're going to go get Switch Airy, and you're going to try and make it so that your opponent can't do, like, the counterplay instantly.
Yeah. I don't know if it's actually that good in that situation or not, but to me, it almost reminds me of, like, when the Arceus decks were playing stuff like Sydney, you know, to counter Mew. Like, it's probably fine. I don't know if it's, like...
Well, you
got to
keep in mind single game Swiss too, right? So it's like,
yeah,
You pop them with the airy one time, they're hurt.
That's true, but also, like, you know, if it's such a, like, common feature in the Arceus decks, like, they probably are starting to expect it by the time they're hitting the end of a 2,700 player tournament, right?
Yeah, but they grinded through day one with it.
For sure, for sure. I think, to me, what my interesting takeaway, if anything, is the fact that Stahl did so well. And, you know, it's very much historically in Japan, the Stahl archetypes have not done well. And I think it bodes for an interesting future to see multiple Stahls in the top eight of a Japanese tournament. Like, I think the repercussions will be immense. You know,
right? Because Stahl doesn't lend itself well to Japan's tournament structure, right?
Right?
Because it's a double game loss. If neither player finishes the game, it's a double game loss. Like, there are no ties in Japan's tournament structure, which I think is pretty awesome. And also both players are incentivized to try and finish the game. So if one player is playing slow, that's only their own demise, because they will just lose the game for both players, right? Now, yep. They cannot possibly scrape any points out of a game they do not finish. So that's one of the reasons why these Stahl decks have not traditionally done well in Japan, because it doesn't really coincide with, like, the logic of their tournament structure. So, yes, I agree with you 100%. If Stahl is showing up and being this powerful in Japan, imagine EYC.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, oof. Stahl has, like, every tool that it could want right now for a Snorlax Stahl sort of situation, and
they love Stahl over in in Europe.
They do. Sheesh. And there's a lot of American players that love Stahl too, and I think with Giratina being a little bit worse now, which is kind of the prime enemy of the Snorlax deck, it just leaves this, like, gaping hole for Snorlax to slowly meander its way through.
So what if there was...
I'm glad you didn't say Phil, bro.
What if there was a deck that had a one prizer that could one shot, that could go through Mimikyu, that played four Jet Energy, similar to Giratina, that maybe could accelerate energy from the deck and had really no liabilities in terms of attackers? What if there was a deck like that to grind through all of the Stahl?
So you're saying that Lugia is the BDAF?
Enter stage left, Lugia V-Star. I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? I mean, you do think of the backdrop of this tournament. A lot of Stahl, a lot of Arceus, just big... You know, first of all, Stahl decks are, you know, something, their own entity, right? We want those Jet Energy that the Lugia decks play. But then you also look at the Arceus decks and the Charizard decks, just big dudes. You know, they're trying to get away with just being a big dude that you can't take care of. Having a one prizer be able to knock out something like a Charizard, something like an Arceus. I was very skeptical when I first saw the results that Lugia had any chops. No pun intended. But... after
he definitely prepped that one.
Got four, bro.
But he after looking at the list, after looking at the list and looking at the metagame, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah,
it does.
It was such a great call, and really, you know, obviously paid off. A great best of one deck, I think. Like, I would take Lugia in best of one.
The Chinchino is the real deal. I mean. Yeah. I got my hands on with the Lugia deck on stream this last week. I was impressed by it in the games that I had played with it. It's a little slightly less consistent than it used to be, it feels like, because you've got... And saying that about Lugia, it's like, oh, man. We're already talking about post-Quick Ball Lugia, right? You know, we got the Capturing Aromas in there. We got all sorts of copium going on. But... when that deck sets up, it just rolls. I mean, you don't even hardly need to play any supporter cards. Once your Archeops are out, the whole deck just operates itself. It's just smooth sailing.
Well, and the craziest thing, this player barely played any supporter cards. There's 3 Iono, 2 Research, 2 Boss, 2 Serena, and a Jacques.
Yep.
And that is it.
Perfect.
You, of course, have your Lumineon to go search out the, you know, exact supporter that you would want in that turn. But it is very energy heavy, very Pokemon heavy, and every other open space is dedicated to balls.
There are 20 Pokemon and 17 energy in this thing.
It's a theme deck, bro.
It is. Yep. It's 2020-20.
2020-20 split.
Just as the prophecy is foretold.
Yeah, it's God's ratio for sure.
That's awesome.
Pretty incredible. And the Master Ball to kind of
put the
cherry on top, dude.
I know. Just whip out the Master Ball from your expanded box. It's coming back.
I own one. I don't think I own a Master Ball. How sad is that?
I have to say, I am so hyped that there's a deck that unironically uses Master Ball. I just am very hyped about that. I love the flavor. I love that it just that there's something different going on. That there's a home for this Master Ball. Dang it, there's a home for it.
And that's like the easy joke is like, oh, it's just like this is the only A-spec I could afford, or like this is the only one I had. But like it's actually the A-spec this deck wants to play, which is so crazy too.
The haters
are livid.
I had this dude in my chat mention it to me this last week. Because I had like the Heroes Cape. I was switching between like Heroes Cape and Prime Catcher because I was just like, I don't know, like that's just one of those. Like just toss it in there and just say whatever. And sure enough, this dude, YRG in my chat, who just like loves Lugia, was like, no, it's Master Ball, like actually. And the thing is he trolls a lot in my chat, so I can like never really tell if he's being sincere or not, but he was like not joking when it came to the Master Ball, and I was like, all right, sure, I'll try it. And the more I played with it, I was like, this is legit, it is the Master Ball, because you just need the deck to set up.
Yeah,
right.
So even just giving yourself that marginal, that little extra bump in consistency makes all the difference.
Yep. Very cool. Very interesting list. Yeah, a lot to take from this first tournament. I'm just kind of like scratching my head. Like if you would have asked me, you know, what would be some of the top archetypes from this Champions League tournament, I don't think like Lugia would have been maybe 15th on my list of top decks. It's really
15
fascinating.
You could think of fourteen decks.
Yeah, you were not dialed in then, brother. You were not dialed in. It's a top 10 deck post rotation for sure.
Okay, a top 10 deck.
It's top 10 for sure.
As opposed to a top 15. Yeah, okay.
Top 15. Those five? I mean, you're really in the weeds with those next five, bro.
That's what I'm saying, man. Name 14 decks right now that aren't Lugia.
I think that it's the bigger thing, almost as big. I mean, obviously, Lugia winning is a big deal. Arceus really showing up. Stahl really showing up. These are all really big stories. But there's also some big stories about which decks did not show up. Are there any noticeable exclusions? Any noticeable decks that are not represented in the top 16?
Chen Pao and Goldengo. Those are my two. I mean, I think coming into this format, you get Buddy Poffin. That's like the big card, in my opinion, from the Temporal Forces set. And what are the two decks that really utilize that card well that are playing the Irida, that can go fetch the Buddy Poffin, that can go get set up, that can set up these big one-hit KO attacks? I don't love Chen Pao personally. Just haven't really. I think it's fine. Like
extremely
it stays
fraudulent.
The same.
Yeah.
It stays the same power level for the most part, that it did into this new format. Nothing really changes, but maybe the metagame around it changes enough that it becomes a higher tier deck. But I thought for sure Goldengo was such a big beneficiary of Buddy Poffin. Being able to search out, if you have that lackluster turn one, being able to search out your Pokemon turn two, three, and get your Goldengos rolling is just very important, and not something that deck had, really relying on the VIP passes to get set up. And if those didn't happen in this format, you're pretty much dead in the water. So I figured that those two decks with the one-shot potential, I mean, I had to look at those as kind of where I was starting with this new format. And these results from Japan are very confusing for me in terms of where those decks and how much those decks were played and if they had any good results.
Yeah, never a surprise to see Chen Pao fail. I don't know.
Well, yeah, Chen Pao kind of sucks. for sure.
I mean, Chen Pao and Golden Go both looked as if they were doing well in Japan's local scene leading up to this event. And those two decks are two of the decks that really make the most use out of Prime Catcher. How many Prime Catchers did we even see in top 8?
Barely any.
I mean, like, is it just maybe the Lost Box deck and that's it?
Yeah. At least from the ones that are on the list right now.
Yeah. So I would have said that those two decks were, like, the best users of Prime Catcher. I mean, they both boast the wombo combo of, like, Prime Catcher, Canceling Clone, I'm going to Radiant Greninja, your Manaphy, and, you know, all that stuff. Those two decks are the decks that could realistically do that. Another thing I'd like to say to all my haters out there. How many Cryptomaniacs Deciphering are in top 8?
That card is so... come on.
That card's not the greatest. I mean, you need a...
That's such a fake card.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you two say that, but I was catching flack for saying that. For all the last 4 weeks, I've been saying that that card stinks. I tweeted about it. I did a whole rant about it. People are like, oh, I'm bookmarking this for later, man. You know? No. And now look at that. And now all the people who are ranting and raving about Cryptomaniacs Deciphering, you got nothing to say. But not a single one is in top 8, bro.
That's not true.
Where is it?
There were some in the Charizard deck.
The Charizard?
Yeah, dude, you play with Bibarel. I thought this was obvious. No. Okay. You just...
All right, there's two.
You flamed yourself, yeah.
Oof. I did. I bodied myself.
Oof.
All right. You were close. Two. You could have just said bookmarkers, like, general lack. Yeah.
Rev your engines.
All right, there's two in the Charizard deck, but that deck, maybe the Charizard deck would have won if they weren't playing that card.
Oh. Clap back.
Yeah, man. I mean, well, you showed them, I think, for sure.
I think those are really the big decks that didn't appear, though, is the Goldengo and the Chen Pao. I mean, you have some more niche strategies that didn't appear, like the Gardevoir are getting noticeably worse, but there is Gardevoir builds that are floating out there in Japan. You have, like, the neck deck, the big neck. That didn't work out. Sorry, GW.
I mean, it's the best of the trio.
Big neck believers are still holding out hope for next time.
Next time.
I think... What I really personally think is interesting is just how varied the specs are, though. I think when people saw Prime Catcher, they went full Doomer mode. It's like, it's over. There's no A spec that could possibly be more viable than this. And just to see, like, pretty much every printed A spec has gotten representation, I think, in that top 8 and top 16. So,
yeah.
Kudos to Pokemon, honestly, for developing a solid suite of A specs. I feel like they have not nailed that right with, like, Radiance and Aspex in, like, every iteration of the singleton card type of deal yet. And I'm really, honestly, proud of them. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. They all have their own little niches. And it does feel like you could swap out an Aspex in some of these decks, depending on what you maybe would expect to see.
Your goals. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So very cool.
Yeah. Great dub from a game design standpoint. You're right. I mean, look at the Radiance. You got, like, Charizard and Greninja are, like, the only ones. And the others are, like, pretty laughable. Yeah, this is a huge win for the singleton cards. Even thinking about the older A specs before it, I mean, really, it had boiled down to Computer Search and Dowsing Machine after a little while, except for your decks that played, like, G Booster. But then even the power discrepancy between cards like G-Booster and G-Scope, it's like, bro, why'd you even print G-Scope? Like, why? Why'd you even waste any cardboard on that?
Isn't there someone who has, like, hundreds of G-Scopes? He, like, collects every single G-Scope so that he can find.
Card is not worth a lot. So.
I'm pretty sure that's the thing.
That's funny.
But it will be when he has them all.
Any final thoughts here on the upcoming, I mean, our impending format? I guess this would be our EYC format coming up in just a few short weeks. Any last thoughts here on the format presented to us by this Japanese Champions League tournament?
I think that the format still has a long ways to go, and that this is just like your first look into it, really. And the format seems like it's kind of open enough that there could be a lot of response and counterplay to the decks that do rise to the top at first. So I think we're going to see a lot of that in the months to come.
Yeah, I think I have two messages for listeners out there. The first is, don't take the first Japanese major as the entirety of the format, as if the format is solved. That never works. That never translates one-to-one to the West. So don't look at this and be like, I'm just going to copy one of these decks and run it, and I'll win my tournament. It's probably not the move. And second, I think to me, when I see the impending format, I see Snorlax kind of looming over it. And that's what I would be most afraid of at this moment in time.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. Pretty dominant performance by the stall decks here in Japan. So that is going to do it for our episode today. You guys are noticing, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, that it's a new day for the release of the podcast. And that is because we are going to be starting Monday evening recordings with a Monday or early Tuesday release of the episode, as opposed to our Wednesday recording with Thursday release. So this is going to be our new schedule. Hope to get that news as soon as it breaks, or at least as close as possible to major tournament happenings or any kinds of releases over the weekend of new cards and things like that. So hopefully this is a positive change. I think we are really excited about that, getting you guys the best in the news as soon as it happens. So that is going to do it for the episode today, guys. If you want to find us on X, you can find Riley at Smiles with Riles, at Enjoy Friend for Andrew, and at Real John Walter for myself, as well as the podcast at Tag Team Pokemon. With that said, I wish you guys all a great rest of your week, and we're signing off here.
See ya.
Later.